Good evening and welcome to another edition of Everything Vaguely Paranormal. I am Ryan Roberts and these are my partners in the paranormal, Mr. Blake Smith and Miss Shelley Pruitt. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm ready. Let's go. You know me and aliens. I'm all about it.
We haven't done aliens in quite some time.
It's been a little bit. I know Shelley is chomping at the bit, but
it has been all I can do to not go and look up this, because I've heard of this one. I've read some things on it, but I have not gone back and refreshed my memory. It was all I could do not to go like, okay, I'm going to go look all this up today. And I didn't. I'm like, I want to be surprised and tell me a friend tells me something I don't know.
So, Blake, what about you? Have you heard about this one?
Well, being the lesser of the alien people on this podcast, no, I do not. So I'm excited to learn something new. I did think it was really funny that, like, this is how bad of an alien person I am.
Yeah.
Going through like Netflix and I saw something that was like Pascagoula alien encounter. I was like, hey, I covered that on the podcast. I know what that is.
I mean, I know you say you're not an alien person, but I think we're slowly starting to turn more
y'all,
to our side.
Yeah. Y'all swayed me. Y'all swayed me a long time ago. It's all good. So I'm excited to hear about this one. I actually know nothing about it. So I'll have a fresh set of eyes. I got my bucket ready.
Well, cool, guys. Well, tonight, of course, we are talking about the Hudson Valley UFO flap from the early 1980s. So for those of you that don't know, the Hudson Valley UFO sightings were a series of UFO sightings that took place on the New York-Connecticut border about an hour from New York City in the early to mid-80s. A large swath of people from many walks of life and educational backgrounds witnessed a strange, large, unidentified object adorned with lights crisscross the Hudson Valley and terrorize and intrigue the hardworking citizens, alarming law enforcement and trusted leaders. It drew so much attention in the area that it attracted a virtual who's who of UFO researchers. People such as Philip J. Imbrogno, Bob Pratt, and the scientific authority on UFOs, and the former head of Project Blue Book, the one and only Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Damn.
These men put boots on the ground and waded through the murky waters of high strangeness, interviewing countless witnesses and trying to piece together what was darkening the skies of the Hudson Valley and terrifying the citizenry across state lines. These are their eyewitness interviews, and just maybe tonight we may be able to solve the Hudson Valley UFO flap.
This is my fan.
I was going to say, man, please tell me you're going to do these eyewitness accounts in your best New York accent.
Oh, we need all the accents tonight, Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go ahead and just piss off a whole bunch of people.
We need them. Come on.
Hey, you know, I saw the fucking alien in the sky over here, you know. Flying around in his fucking little craft, you know.
Oh, God.
All right, guys, so let's just go ahead and jump into this whole deal. So the first sighting of the unusual craft was on New Year's Eve of 1982. Shortly before the clock struck midnight, Tony...
Try that phrase again, Ryan, just
shortly,
real quick.
Shortly before the clock struck midnight,
there you go.
Tony Valor, a retired New York Police Department cop.
Words are hard. Are you sure you weren't drinking before we got there?
I am positive. His wife and two kids were celebrating the incoming New Year. Tony popped open a bottle of champagne and had an idea. The Valor family had just moved into this brand new home. And since it was a new home and a new year, Tony decided he was going to christen the house. So he took the freshly opened champagne bottle outside and smashed it up against the wall. Pleased with himself and his actions, he went inside and told his wife what he'd done.
Alcohol abuse. Sorry.
Boo.
Boo.
You're going to have to pick out that glass up out of the yard. The kids running around. What an idiot.
Right. So much to his chagrin, she was less than amused about what he had done and told him to go out in the yard and pick up all the broken glass because she didn't want the kids playing in the yard and getting hurt. So Tony went outside to clean it up. And when he did, he saw something he would never forget. Tony, having picked up all the glass, just happened to look up into the sky. And when he did, he saw a cluster of lights moving slowly towards the house. At first, he thought it was an airline just having a bit of engine trouble, but realized soon it was moving way too slow for that to be the case. Not believing what he was seeing, he yelled for his wife to come outside and to bring the video camera with her. And by the time she got outside, the lights had gotten very close. The couple looked a little closer and noticed the lights were in a boomerang shape. and they were connected to some kind of structure. And Tony could hear a faint hum emanating from the object. As Tony turned on the camera and began to film, the object slowly lumbered over the home. The lights on the craft went off, and white lights in the shape of a triangle came on. The white lights were so bright that they illuminated the ground underneath it. And 3 seconds later, the white lights went out and colored lights illuminated the craft, numbering about 15 in total. The craft then continued on its way and disappeared over a grove of trees, leaving the Valors absolutely astonished.
What?
Yeah. I mean, imagine going outside and seeing that in the middle of the night.
Hey, they were celebrating alien Christmas. That's why they had all the blinky colored lights on their tree.
So, okay, hold on. Mm-hmm. Just to recap real quick, so I haven't, because I've never heard, you know, I've never looked into this case.
Right.
So what did you say he did for work again? He was a
retired New York Police Department.
Okay, that's what I thought. Officer. Just didn't want to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. And so now it's New Year's. He just goes outside, breaks a champagne bottle, looks up, and there's these lights.
And sees these lights coming towards the house.
Boomerang shaped at first. They go out, come back on, and
illuminate like a triangle shape.
And then those go out and come back in color.
Mm-hmm. And then it flies over the trees and goes away from the house. Not completely silent, because he said he heard a very low humming sound.
Right.
And as we go along, you're going to kind of see where a lot of them say it was silent. Then there's a couple of people who said they did actually hear a very low hum coming from the craft.
And he said he hollered for his wife to bring the video camera.
Yes.
Can you please reenact that for us?
Hey, honey, there's some fucking lights in the sky. Bring some fucking cameras outside.
I'll be right there. Bring it yourself.
Hey, fuck you. Get it your damn self. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of f-bombs in this one. So,
oh Lord.
All right, so a few minutes after the sighting at the Valor home, 55-year-old warehouse foreman Edwin Hansen was traveling down Interstate 84 when he noticed several lights hovering over the highway in front of him, and he saw several cars pulled over on the side of the road, so he decided to pull over and observe the show in the sky. At first, he told himself it was just a helicopter, but all these illusions were shattered when he noticed it was silent and began to make slow, tight circles over all the eyewitnesses. The object then shot a beam of extremely white light down to the ground. Hansen was absolutely dumbfounded and thought to himself that he wished the object would come closer so he could see it better. And as if it read his mind, the object came directly towards his car. When he could see where he could see that it was boomerang shaped and so massive that it was blocking out the sky. But as the object got close, it became too close for Hansen's comfort. And as he sat in his car, he began pleading for the object to just go away. Suddenly, from out of nowhere, he heard a very unfamiliar voice telling him not to be afraid. But Hansen was quite fearful, and the craft turned and went in the opposite direction. And Hansen immediately hit the gas and fled the scene. He wanted no part of any of this.
Okay, this is having very big time like similarities to almost like Indrid Cold.
A little bit.
This whole like nervousness, telepathy, familiar voice, friendly boy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he said it was a soothing voice, and like a very unfamiliar but soothing voice. And yeah, it kinda does. I mean, we don't have like any contact with an entity in this case, but we do have somebody getting messages beamed to them to tell them not to be afraid. But I don't know about you, if I see some big lumbering boomerang shaped object I'm coming towards me that I can't identify, I'm gonna be pretty damn scared. So after the Valor and Hansen sighting, the craft wasn't seen until almost a month later, on the night of February 26, 1983. Monique O'Driscoll and her 17-year-old daughter were driving home from a dinner and were listening to the radio and just riding along, when all of a sudden the radio became extremely staticky. And about the time Monique turned off the radio, her daughter spotted the craft on the side of a hill hovering next to the car. Monique said it was huge and had about 50 lights on it, but she kept driving and watched as the gigantic craft flew over their car and over a frozen lake to their right. Monique's curiosity got the best of her, so she pulled over. She got out and took a look at the curious object traversing the lake. As she watched, she said out loud, "Please don't go away. I want to look at you." As soon as she uttered those words, the mammoth silent object pulled a U-turn and began flying directly towards her.
No.
However, Monique's daughter was not as enthusiastic. She yelled for her mother to get back into the car. So Monique began backing away slowly back towards their car, and as if the craft sensed the apprehension of the mother and daughter, it too began backing away slowly, stopped mid-flight, reversed its course, and flew off over some nearby hills. A few minutes later, you're going to laugh at this name, Herbert Proudfoot and two friends were driving down highway, again driving down I-84. His two friends just happened to be air traffic controllers. And as the three men traveled, they spotted several lights in a boomerang shape coming over the highway. Proudfoot pulled the car over and the three of them got out to observe whatever this thing was. As they watched, the object flew above them and stopped directly overhead. They looked up and were struck by how silent the craft was and noted that the underside was completely black and blocked out the night sky. The object suddenly began to move and again flew over a grove of nearby woods where the trio lost sight of it. Neither of the men could believe what they had just seen, and the two seasoned aviation professionals could not identify it. The best they could figure was it was some sort of experimental government craft, but even then, they weren't sure.
So now you've got police officer and two aviation officials who have now seen this. And this thing almost has like some sort of telepathy of some sorts.
It seems like
it can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to be able to, you know, sense emotion almost, you know, where if you are wanting it to come towards you, it's going to come towards you. If you want it to leave, it's going to be like, okay, sorry. I know when I'm not wanted. I'll just fly over here. Bye guys.
You just had a great comment come in that said, note to self, don't drive on Highway 84.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, 84 is actually featured pretty prominently in this story. Don't drive on 84
don't or Taconic Parkway. 84. All right, got it.
Now, as impressive and as interesting as the previous sightings have been, the night of March 24th, 1983 proved to be a dazzling display across several counties and over several hours across the Hudson Valley. That evening's event started shortly after 8:30 p.m. when Dr. Lawrence Greenman was at his home with his family that evening. He and his wife saw several strange lights outside. So they went outside to observe, and they saw a V-shaped cluster of lights. Mrs. Greenman grabbed her binoculars. Both she and Lawrence took a look, and what they found were the lights were connected to a V-shaped structure. Both she and Lawrence noticed that the object itself seemed to be of a dull green color, in contrast to the black object that was seen previously. As they observed the craft, a beam of white light shot out of it, and within the beam, they noticed a small reddish object descend out of the craft and shoot off at a high rate of speed towards the north. The beam of light turned off, and the object moved to the south, stopped on a dime, and turned east, continuing on its path.
So it's shitting babies now.
Yeah, it's just shitting baby craft.
Shitting baby craft now, so. All right.
Yeah. So it only gets weirder.
Oh, lovely. Great. So none other before this one has seen this little red thing.
No.
They've seen the white light, but not the little red thing coming out.
No. This was the first time.
It's no longer a boomerang shape. It's a V shape.
It's a V shape. And as we go along in the story too, the craft seems to, it seems to go back and forth between boomerang and V shape. So it was multiple, but they all behave the same. So people aren't really sure if it was multiple craft or not.
Gotcha. Okay.
So shortly after the Greenman sighting, Joan Lindauer had an experience that she would never forget. She was driving home from work to her home in Croton, New York. As she drove, she was approached by an aircraft that she thought was an airplane, but became uneasy when she realized it was following her and staying parallel with her car. At first, she couldn't get a good look at whatever it was because it was in a rural area and the road was lined with trees on either side. But when she hit a clearing, she could make out just what had been following her. It was the same massive V-shaped craft adorned with lights that had been reported in the valley earlier that year. Joan pressed the gas a little harder and drove into the small town of Millwood with this thing right on her tail. As she stopped at the stoplight, the object picked up speed, swung around in front of her, and hovered just above the intersection, right over the traffic light.
So it's stalking her, and then it whips around like, hey, baby.
Where are you going? You going my way?
Get out of here, yo, alien.
The brilliant white lights on the craft turned into a deep red as it held its position in the sky. The traffic light changed and Joan hit the gas, getting the hell out of Dodge, and was able to shake the boomerang-shaped bogey. But it continued to make itself known throughout the valley that evening. After the object terrorized Joan, it switched its direction of travel and began to drift north towards the city of Yorktown. As it casually floated that direction, a large swath of people witnessed it and lit up the switchboard at the local police station like a Christmas tree, calling in with reports of the odd anomaly heading towards town. When it did reach town, police officer Kevin Sorvia witnessed the object. He watched as it hovered through the center of downtown, stopped, did a 180-degree rotation, and then drift away. The object continued to travel and made its way to Taconic Parkway, a busy main road in that area of the country, where chief meteorologist for the National Weather Corporation, Bill Hill, happened to see it. Bill was driving on the parkway when traffic came to a halt. Bill then saw a large boomerang-shaped object coming towards him. As it approached, it lowered to an altitude of 1,000 feet, and it was completely silent and slowed to a crawl adjacent to Bill and the moon. As it did, the lights went out, and Bill couldn't see the craft anymore. It was as if the entire craft had just disappeared. Bill was confused, but as he thought about it, he became somewhat frightened. And as soon as the fear creeped into his mind, the lights on the craft came back on and the object was visible once more. The lights on the craft turned a slime green and Bill watched as it drifted out of sight.
See, I've seen these movies where, you know, the light turns red or green. And usually that's when the slasher or the something gets them. No, you just get the hell out of Dodge. So remind me again from the very first one to here.
Mm-hmm.
What time span are we talking about now?
I think this is all within less than an hour, because this is like as it's traveling, people are seeing this.
Oh, no. I mean, from the very first story you said, and then there was a month interlude till the next one, and then a couple of months later after that.
So this is about 3 months from the first story, because the first story happened like right before New Year's. This is March of that year.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's like a Skyroom, but running amok.
Not the Skyroom, but
because you said it's going, then it's turning, then it's going this way, then it's turning, then it's going this way. It's like, what is it doing?
I said, ah, shit, there's that fucking couch again.
Be not afraid, for I am the Skyroom.
That is my new term, giving credit. I'm going to give credit all to Shelly, but that is my new term for UFOs now.
Look at that Sky Roomba.
Sky Roombas. It's just Sky Roombas. That's like fantastic.
It's going here, then it's turning, then it's going here, then it's turning, then it's going here, and then it turns around, it goes back this way, like a Roomba.
Sky Roombas. I love it.
It's like damn bridge.
Stoplight.
Oh, man.
So around the same time the object left Bill's sight, off-duty Greenberg police officer Mike Turnbull and his wife happened to be traveling down Taconic Parkway. Both he and his wife witnessed a large boomerang-shaped object moving in complete silence and illuminated by lights lining the structure. Not believing what he was seeing, Mike pulled over to get a better look, as did several other drivers spooked by the magnificent structure overhead. And just as they got out of their cars, the lights on the object went out again, and it completely disappeared. Mike and the other witnesses were confused how such a large structure just vanished.
And ran out of charge. Back to the docking station.
Shelly just solved all the UFO mysteries that we have. That's how it's happening, guys. They leave the docking station and run out of juice right when they get over us. That's what it is. Fucking Sky Roombas.
Ryan Sigel.
Stupid. So dumb. Love it. As they stood there.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Ryan made me laugh. I'm going to mute my mic.
As they stood there absolutely bumfuzzled, the lights on the craft came back on. But the craft was now in a different part of the sky, far away from the group of onlookers. Just then, the object picked up speed and left everyone's sight over another grove of trees.
What kind of fucking thesaurus are you using, my man?
Bumfuzzled?
Bumfuzzled?
You never heard that before?
No.
It's a word. Look it up.
I'm not doubting you, but what kind of fucking thesaurus do you have?
The Southern thesaurus.
There you go. It ain't Southern, because I ain't ever heard that.
Sure enough, it is. Look it up. I'm telling you.
Bum puzzled. Damn. See, everybody, thank you. Everybody's agreeing with me. Bum puzzled. The hail? Yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's a word. I promise you.
We'll give it to you. We'll let Ryan have this one.
As if the initial sightings were not strange enough, another bizarre series of sightings with a similar object was taking place about 15 miles away in Putnam County, right next door. At 8:30 that evening, James Holtzman and his wife and sons were traveling down Route 301. As they drove along the darkened country road, they noticed something up ahead. Hovering about 300 feet above the road in front of them was a collection of multicolored lights in a boomerang shape attached to a structure or a craft. As they approached, they all noticed this thing was incredibly silent. James slowed his car to get a better look and process what he was seeing. At the same time, another car came from the opposite direction. The Holtzmans watched the driver stop his car, get out, look up at the object, and suddenly the lights on the object began to flash in sequence. So the other driver had seen enough, hopped in his car, and floored it. As the driver left, the object turned its attention. Yeah.
Yeah.
As the driver left, the object turned its attention towards the Holtzman family. It began to float slowly towards their car, causing Mrs. Holtzman to become extremely uneasy and beg James to get them out of there. James obliged and hit the gas to get them the hell out of Dodge. But to get away from this object, they had to pass directly underneath it. As they did, it shot down an intense beam of white light onto the car, causing one of the Holtzman boys' skin to tingle. And although strange, there was no after effects and the Holtzmans were able to get away.
He was bum-fuzzled too, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Completely bum-fuzzled. A few moments later, the object was spotted again in Stormville, New York. Dozens of people eating at a nearby restaurant saw a boomerang-shaped craft hovering over a light pole about 200 yards away from the restaurant. But little did they know, directly under the UFO was John Wright and two children. Wright was a Putnam County corrections officer and former police officer. He took two of his neighbor's kids for a ride that evening. But when they got close to the restaurant in Stormville, something caught their attention hovering over the light pole about 200 feet off the ground. It was a V-shaped object adorned with lights and was completely silent. Wright stopped the Jeep and got out and looked more intently. He was so close to the object that he could see that it had windows. As he focused more, he was able to see inside of it. The craft itself was dark in color and did not reflect light, but inside there was a plethora of flashing lights. Wright could make out movement inside the craft, but couldn't make out what was moving. He stood there for a good 20 minutes trying to make sense of it all, but was shaken from his concentration when the kids in the Jeep began to cry. So he figured he should get out of there and got back in the Jeep to leave. But just as the Jeep began to move, so did the craft. So Wright began to follow the craft, which led him back to Highway 84, where it stopped again and hovered over the freeway. So Wright stopped again, got out to look at the object, but this time was joined by several other motorists. As if it knew it was being watched, the thing swung around and came right over the witnesses' heads, where it did something extraordinary. Seven lights broke away from the craft. And six white and one red. And the white lights started jumping up and down and moving at 90-degree angles above the group of onlookers on the ground. After they put on the dazzling display, the lights rejoined the object in the sky, and then the object floated away, only to reappear at the home of John Picone. Picone was an employee of Grumman Aerospace. He was familiar with air and spacecraft, but this object behaved like nothing he had ever seen. He and his family were out in the driveway that evening and watched as the silent V-shaped object approached his home. The silence of the craft confused Picone, but because if it were a traditional aircraft, it would have made noise. But nonetheless, the object passed over the driveway and the Picone family. As it did, one of the lights on the wings detached from the main body and backed away as if it were observing the Picones.
So now
this one has wings.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing is like a giant wing. So one of the lights broke off from it.
Okay. But now it's got multiple things coming off of mm-hmm. it at this yeah. point. Because you said like six white, one red,
mm-hmm.
basically dancing around it.
Dancing around the sky at 90 degree angles.
And then joining it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes so no weird. Sense. Like, because it's like shifting shapes as it goes along.
I'm trying to... I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything else that we've talked about or that I might have seen or heard that resembled this. And
And you have the guy that works for Grumman Aerospace. Like the dude knows what he's talking about. He's working with space and aircraft all day, every day. And he knows what's in development and he can't even quite put his finger on what he's looking at. And that's what I like about this case. And as we continue to go, you'll see like it's just so many doctors and scientists and police officers and military personnel and that are seeing this thing. So these are educated people that are seeing this thing that I think lends a lot of credence to this whole case.
So. Well, that's kind of what we mm-hmm. always say, you know, I mean, it's different whenever, okay, Farmer Bill out in the middle of his pasture mm-hmm. alone by himself sees one, you know, we don't discount his story, but
right.
when you have four police officers, you know, a meteorologist, a sky man or whatever, watching the sky Roombas.
Yes, the sky man.
I don't know. It makes it a different case, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There's a little, these people are trained to know what's in the sky.
Right. And then remember too, you have Dr. J. Allen Hynek
mm-hmm.
helping with these interviews. And that guy is no slouch. Like he is the guy who headed up Project Blue Book. So he knows what he's looking for, and these people really did see something.
Well, they said it just needs to do the hokey pokey, and we will be all wrapped up.
Well, it already turned itself around several times in the sky. So. So the light that broke off of the main... Did I kill Blake?
This is a very serious topic tonight, guys. We're trying to figure this case out.
The light that broke off of the craft then rejoined the main craft, and the whole body continued on its way. Pacome was now even more confused and didn't know what he had just experienced. Around 9 p.m. back in Westchester County, things began to get even more strange. Newcastle police officer Andy Sadoff was sitting in her police cruiser. Suddenly, a large formation of lights in a boomerang shape crested the hill to her left. The lights were attached to a large craft that passed over her and floated towards Newcastle. She couldn't believe her eyes and watched as it floated out of sight. She thought to herself that it was something else, but was glad it was gone. 4 minutes later, she saw it returning, and it was headed directly towards her cruiser. Scared for what may happen, she locked her doors and hoped it would go away. But her curiosity once again got the best of her, and she stuck her head out the window. She slowly cast her eyes towards the sky and realized her worst fear had come true. The object had stopped directly above her car. She quickly pulled her head back in and radioed what she was seeing back to headquarters. About 12 seconds later, the object finally moved and flew over a nearby ridge. Officer Sadoff did not stick around to see if it came back. She drove back into town and directly back to headquarters with questions swirling around in her brain. She parked her cruiser and went directly to her supervisor. She told him all about what she had experienced and asked if he knew what it was. He didn't, but told her they had received calls all night about what she had seen. It was so strange that all these people had multiple sightings across the whole entire Hudson Valley, but no one had any answers about what it could have been flying over that night. Except for when the state police sent out the quote-unquote answer the next morning. They issued a statement to the local police saying that the whole incident had been caused by several lighter-than-aircraft flying in a formation using special lights. However, everyone who saw them knew that was not the case. Lighter than aircraft are essentially a hand glider with a small engine and are illegal to operate at night.
Yeah.
Plus, it's almost impossible to keep them in formation. Also, they are incredibly loud and you can hear them coming from way far off. So it was abundantly clear that the police didn't know what was stalking the skies above the Hudson Valley. Now, I've had experience. I've never flown a lighter than aircraft, but when I was a kid, we used to live out in the country and there was a guy that had one. And you can hear those things for a long, long time before they get right up on you. It's like a lawnmower.
Go-kart looking things?
Yeah.
Basically, somebody gave a go-kart wings. And they were like, here, have at it.
And it's got like the parachute thing on it. They go get around and start lifting the air. It's got that like, looks like a, one of those airboat
Things on the back of it. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
like, because we would be out in the yard in the evening when I was a kid. We kind of lived out in the country, and you would hear that thing just like, so I guess it sounds like a lawnmower coming from way far off, and you can hear it for, I mean, a good like 2 or 3 minutes before it gets up on you.
Very loud. I actually had an experience with one come over the house not too long ago, maybe a couple of months ago, because we do have a very small airport out here right next to us. And so somebody decided to take off in one of those. They're very loud. Just one. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm like, damn, dude, shut up.
I mean, and like, there were up to 50 lights in some of these sightings. I mean, could you imagine how loud damn 50 of them are flying around with each other? That's insane. So nobody had any answers basically on what was going on. So, and the strange craft did not make an appearance for a few days after the dazzling display it put on the 24th. But when it returned on the 31st of March that year, it did so in such a fashion that it scared the bejesus out of Cindy Tillison. That evening, she was enjoying a night at home in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Her husband wasn't home, so it was just her and their Great Dane Thunder. While she was watching TV in her bedroom, Thunder went to the living room and started barking like crazy. So she got up to see what was making him act so strange. All the lights in the house were off, so she cautiously navigated the dark hallway and into the dark living room where Thunder was standing at the sliding glass storm door and going absolutely bananas. As she walked to the storm door, she could see what he was barking at. Hovering over the woods in her backyard was a bright, red, glowing V-shaped object. For some unknown reason, Cindy reached over to one of the light switches and turned on the floodlights in the backyard. When she did, the object turned towards the left. So she quickly turned out the lights and the object returned to its original position. She flicked them back on again and the object shifted to the right. Suddenly, she got the feeling that she was being watched, and got the most uneasy feeling as she turned off the lights. She backed away from the storm door and hoped the object would leave. But every time she looked, it was still there. The last time she took a look, the lights on the front of it started changing colors, and it shot down a beam of white light directly from its center to the ground, which really spooked Cindy, so she ran to the phone to get help. She called her brother-in-law to come up to the house to see this thing, but right after she hung up the phone, the craft completely disappeared. It didn't fly away. It just vanished. And by the time her brother-in-law got there, there was no trace of the object. But Cindy was clearly shaken. The effects of seeing this craft lasted into the next day. Cindy was still shaken, and so was Thunder, so much so that Thunder refused to go outside. After Cindy Tillison's sighting, it was almost a year before the UFO was seen again. But on March 25th, 1984, it returned to the Hudson Valley. Immediately, several police departments started receiving calls about the massive UFO returning. While some police departments investigated the reports, others dismissed the calls, such as Danbury, Connecticut, who accused a caller of being under the influence and telling him to go sleep it off. But as the UFO traversed the night sky, it crossed the path of pro photographer Jack Grimsley. Grimsley was driving home around 8:45 that evening when he saw a large light from lights from the craft. It passed over his car and turned, heading towards Croton Falls Reservoir. Grimsley, being the consummate photographer, remembered he had a video camera, so he pulled over by the reservoir and got his camera out of the back. The object was about 100 yards in front of him and hovering 50 feet off of the water. Grimsley started filming and watching the craft. As he filmed, he could make out the structure the lights were attached to. But suddenly the lights went out and the craft disappeared. It was nowhere to be found. So Grimsley got back in his car to leave. As he started his car, he looked at the time. He was absolutely shocked because he had watched the UFO. He thought he had watched the UFO for 15 minutes, but it was a whole hour later. Grimsley had experienced missing time. Although it was strange, Grimsley didn't waste any time. He drove home and immediately popped his camcorder tape into the VCR. He pressed play and watched the tape. And what he had was an absolutely compelling video of the Hudson Valley UFO. He instantaneously picked up the phone and called his friend to tell him about it. His friend wanted to see it, but Grimsley wouldn't be able to take it over until the next day. So he put it in his car for safekeeping and so he wouldn't forget it. When he went over to his friend's house the next day, he was so excited to show him what he had captured. He popped the tape in and pressed play. And mysteriously, the entire portion of the tape with the UFO was erased.
Yeah, somebody you gotta keep that stuff locked up. You don't leave it right. Hard. That's foolish.
Yeah, that's dumb. You don't want to leave that there. So had somebody tampered with it? It made absolutely no sense. How did a whole portion of video just up and erase itself?
Smart
so, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but then again, too, I don't know how magnetism, you know, I mean, there could have been like some magnetism.
Play it, but why right. would you have been able to play it in the first place?
Right, exactly. I don't know. I don't know how magnetism, if there's like adverse, like delayed effects of magnetism that maybe could have erased the tape. I don't know. Or did somebody get a hold of it? Who knows?
Well, I mean, I was just about to say what just got put in the comments, Men in Black.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. I don't know. I don't think he ever got a visit though. I don't think anybody ever came to talk to him. So somebody could have just snagged the tape, erased it and stuck it back in his car. But who would have known?
Here come the Men in Black.
Later that year in July, Ed Mulholland was on his way to work in Danbury. Ed worked at the Perkin Elmer Corporation, the company that built the optics and electrical components for the Hubble Space Telescope. Hmm. At about 11 p.m., he saw an object hovering over a golf course just off of Interstate 84. There's 84 again. Ed pulled off the highway and parked at a local fairground. He got out of his car and watched this thing hover, just trying to figure it out. It wasn't long before the object flew towards Ed and passed right over the top of him. It came over at about 500 feet, going to 10 to 15 miles an hour, and was again silent. The white lights adorning the craft turned off and turned blue as it passed over Ed. But the most puzzling thing about the entire encounter was as the craft passed over Mulholland, he could tell it was massive. However, it was almost completely transparent. Mulholland could see the night sky directly through it, but could still make out the shape of the structure. This completely baffled Mulholland as he had watched in amazement. How could something so huge be so silent and almost invisible? And I think this really affected him because, you know, he's working at the optics lab for the Hubble Space Telescope. But how is this thing able to make itself invisible when they don't even possess that technology at the time? So the next person to see it that night was Keith Reed. He and a friend were driving on Interstate 84 and saw the craft over the interstate. They were absolutely enthralled, so they decided to follow it. They tailed the craft for about a mile before they came to a clearing and decided to stop and get out. They exited the car and watched the lights from the object change colors. But then the most peculiar thing happened. The object began to change shape. The astonished onlookers watched as it turned from its initial boomerang shape into a blimp shape, and then into a circle, a square, and finally into a triangle. They could not believe what they were seeing. How was a solid craft just changing its shape at will? No answers came as a shape-shifting anomaly picked up speed and disappeared over a ridge.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. All right. No, I don't even have anything smart ass to say to that. Like we trying to fit the round peg in the square hole or something. Like we trying to make it work.
I mean, I don't think there's any way you can really make it work if they watch this thing change shape. I mean, and it keeps going back and forth between a half moon boomerang looking shape and a V shape. And now we have it changing into basically circles, squares, blimps, and everything else.
That shape that's on the screen with basically round or half moon or whatever to a triangular kind of shape like that.
Just like that.
Huh.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And also, this thing's structure itself just seems to be changing because you have it black at certain points. You have it, you know, people have seen it look like a dull green. Other people have seen it completely translucent, you know, so I don't know what it is.
I am bumfuzzled and bamboozled.
As the object continued to crisscross the area that evening, several policemen witnessed it. Its late night waltz across the sky, including Danbury, Connecticut Police Chief Nelson Macedo. He and his brother-in-law, Charles, and his nephew were all out at Candlewood Lake that evening doing a bit of late-night fishing on the water. Shortly before 11 p.m., Michael looked up at the sky and yelled, "What's that?"
Do it the correct accent, Ryan.
The fuck is that?
There you go. Continue on with your fabulous story.
The chief and his brother-in-law turn around to see a large circular dull gray object lit up like a Christmas tree with 20 to 30 lights around the outer edge, displaying multiple colors flashing in a circular pattern. While the object itself remained completely motionless, Charles was absolutely terrified, so he immediately shut the lights off on their boat. And when he did, the object also shut its lights out. Not wanting to be stuck in the dark with this thing, Charles flipped the boat's lights back on, and as soon as he did, the craft turned its lights back on.
It's like it's their signaling.
Right. Yeah, it's like, and it's mimicking what it's saying. I'm sorry, I was cracking the fuck up a while ago because somebody just said literal definition of shapeshifters. I bet they're sitting up there going, Dave, watch their faces when I do this. Now this.
Press the button.
I had to mute my mic. I literally laughed out loud. Sorry.
No, it's totally fine, man. So the object's lights turned yellow and got very bright, almost as if it was messing with Charles. But much to the trio's relief, the object began to move and floated out of sight. They got off the lake rather quickly and went home. But Chief Macedo wanted answers. So as soon as he went back to work, he contacted the FAA. And the answer they gave him was absolutely asinine. They told the 22-year police veteran that he saw a formation of ultralight aircraft. Once again, they're coming out with that ultralight explanation. But he didn't buy their explanation for 1 second. He knew what an ultralight was and had seen many aircraft in his years on the force. And that was unlike any aircraft he had ever seen. And Chief Macedo was not the only citizen to get stonewalled by the FAA. Several concerned citizens called the FAA that night to report their sighting. And not only did they report what they had seen, but they also asked the FAA, hey, can you give us an explanation? And they used the classic ultralight explanation for a lot of people that had called in. However, some were told they had seen helicopters flying in formation. And these limp and flimsy explanations satisfied some citizens, but angered most. These were educated people, and they knew what they had seen. After such a large showing on the 12th, it was a while before the craft came back, but when it did 12 days later, it showed up in a very dramatic fashion that terrorized a whole security team, at a nuclear power facility.
Oh, damn.
A former police officer and security team member at the Indian Point Energy Center named Carl claimed to see the object buzz the facility on July the 24th. That night, while he was on patrol, he heard another security guard come over the radio and say, here comes that UFO, which sent red flags up all throughout campus. The 5-man security team and 2 supervisors got eyes on the bogey as it came closer to the power station. When the security team got a visual on the UFO, they saw the leading edge of it, and it had lights arranged in a semicircle fashion. They were yellow and white, but turned blue. At the very tail end of the craft was a singular red light, which gave the craft the appearance of an ice cream cone shape.
How many shapes is this thing? So an ice cream cone shape now.
Yeah, now it's an ice cream cone shape. This thing has apparently a plethora of shapes it likes to turn into.
I'm sorry, but I'm laughing at limp explanations, just what you expect from the government.
That's true. As they watched the craft pass over at about 5 miles per hour, they all noted how massive it seemed to be, measuring about 3 football fields long. As soon as it passed over, they figured out where it was going. It was beelining it directly for the nuclear reactor. So they drew their shotguns on the low lumbering object, just waiting to receive the order to shoot at it.
Oh, God.
The nervous guard. Yeah, I know. I don't know what a shotgun's going to do against the intergalactic, vehicle, but whatever. The nervous guards watched as it got within 300 feet of the exhaust tower, and suddenly the plant's security system mysteriously shut down. And the alarm system failed. Also, all communication systems in the plant immediately shut down. Quickly, the head of security sprang into action and called the National Guard base. He asked if the National Guard could identify the craft, but they could not, and they came back with a negative ID on whatever it was. Not knowing what else to do, and wanting to rectify the situation, the head of security requested they send a helicopter to come shoot it down. So the guard sent one over to carry out the request, but while the helicopter was en route, the UFO flew away. And the security team had to pick their jaws up off the floor. Whatever this was, disabled security at a major power station like it was child's play. And not even the military knew what it was. Even though the event was witnessed by several people, the head of security called a meeting the next day and told all of the guards on duty that they had seen nothing. Nothing had happened the previous night, and they were to forget about it. Once again...
I have a quick question. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said that they came back with a negative ID. Is mm-hmm. that basically saying there's nothing up there, or is that saying we don't know what it is?
They didn't know what it was.
Mm.
So whenever you say that the FAA came back with a negative ID...
No, that was the National Guard came back with a negative ID.
The National Guard came back with a negative ID. Mm-hmm. They're just going, we don't know what it is?
Yeah, they said, we don't know what it is. We can't tell you what that is. We don't know what it is.
Okay.
And so they sent the helicopter over to assist because they didn't know what they didn't know exactly what it was.
I just wanted to clarify. What do you mean a negative ID? You can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. All right.
Yeah. Not that it wasn't there, but you know, hey, I've got this thing hovering over me.
We just don't know what it is.
Yeah. No, that's a negatory. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
I don't believe I've ever heard of something being labeled as having a negative ID.
Yeah. So
they were bumfuzzled and bamboozled to bejesus,
just like everybody else.
Just like everybody else in this story.
So once again, officials were trying to sweep this whole thing under the rug. And it wasn't until the fall.
No pun intended. I'm sorry, I couldn't hold back. No pun intended. Oh,
you're okay, man.
Couldn't sweep it under the rug. The Skyrim, but you couldn't get rid
the
of
Skyrim.
It.
It then cleaned the rug because it cleaned the rug.
I saw my opening. Sorry, go on with your story.
It wasn't until the fall that the object returned, and almost ironically, it came back on Halloween night.
Of course it did.
Of course.
This time, it wasn't a scientist, an aviator, or a Joe Schmo on a rural back road seeing it. It was several members of the local media that laid eyes on it. Night news editor at WVIP Radio, Jerry Colleton, was at the station that night in Mount Kisco, New York. When the phone began ringing off the hook, Culleton answered, and on the other end was a very excited woman. She said she had seen the infamous UFO and it was coming directly towards the station.
So I've seen it.
I've done seen it. It's coming. So Culleton hung up and ran outside. He looked up in the sky, and sure enough, he saw it coming over the trees from the northeast. He was very excited and called to the others inside. So the nighttime DJ, Dick Farrell, a intern and the copywriter all came outside to see the object. The object came towards the group, made a wide turn, and then disappeared just over the tree line. Colleton excitedly ran back inside to grab a video camera, hoping to document what was happening. He snagged the camera and ran back outside, and as he came back out, the UFO appeared again. It had made a circle and came back over the trees next to the station's transmitter. Colleton and the others watched the craft for about 25 minutes as it circled the station several times, almost performing for the perplexed group, before it floated up and out of sight. And although the sightings of the craft peaked in the mid-1980s, people still reported seeing it sporadically into the early 90s. And one day it left and was never seen again. However, the most significant thing about these sightings was the consistency, and that almost everybody had the same type of story and encounter, lending credence to the fact that something strange was appearing in the sky above the Hudson Valley. No one can deny that hundreds of witnesses saw something and that they cannot explain. Good, educated, hardworking, honest people had their whole world rattled. These things were not ultralight aircraft flying in formation. They were not helicopters. These people know what they saw, and what they saw was completely unexplained. And that's the story of the Hudson Valley UFOs. What do y'all think? What do y'all think it was?
I think it was fucking aliens. The Sky Roomba. The goddamn Sky Roomba. Like, a shape-shifting, Dave pressing all the buttons. Thanks for that. I'm totally stealing Dave up in the aircraft, by the way. pushing all the buttons, changing, you know, just bum-fuzzling the crap out of everybody.
So, I mean, do you think there's a possibility that it could have been a experimental government aircraft, or do you think that it was completely alien?
See, I have a hard time with this experimental government aircraft. I'm not saying that they're not, I'm not saying they don't exist. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying, could it be a possibility? Yes, it could always be a possibility. Something top secret from the government, because, you know, there's they tell us of what they're actually doing. I don't know, though. It's just the one thing that gets me is the telepathy type,
right,
or telepathic abilities, if you will, of this. No, don't go. I want to see you. And then it comes back. And then people getting scared and it backs off, or they back off and it backs off, or the mimicking of the lights. And the mimicking of the lights, that can make sense, you know, if it's experimental government aircraft or whatever. They see lights come on, they turn theirs on. But this whole thing of almost reading people's minds, I don't know, that pushes it to just a little bit higher of a level for me.
But was it actually reading their minds, or is that what they thought was going on? Oh, I got scared and it backed up, and then they inched closer and it's like, oh, then it came back towards me. And was that real? Or you're trying to assign motivation and thought processes to something you don't even know what it is. So.
Very true. Really?
True. But say, but you did have several cases where people like expressed an interest in, like, at least two or three where they expressed an interest in wanting to see it. And as soon as that thought crossed their mind, it reacted to it and came back towards them.
I summoned it. Get out of here. It came back over the ridge. Get out of here with that.
I mean, hold on. No, wait. No, because we had an experiment that we did that we were a part of. Where we thought at the very beginning, I'll be dead honest. We thought, okay, this is probably not going to work, but we're going to, you know, I don't know, satisfy these people who are doing this. And we had a very interesting experience where
we did.
Person was leading it, summoning aliens or UFO craft or anything like that. And out of nowhere, collective experience of seeing things in the sky.
I didn't see what you guys saw.
Well, that's wonderful. You did see something.
You did see something, number one.
I did see something. Because, you see, you guys were the sheep that stayed all in the same area. I'm looking around going, yeah, I better go over here in case something comes down and grabs everybody. Got to be somebody to tell a story. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that we were sheep. I would say that we were having a collective experience. And, I wanted to be in an area with more people so they could validate what I was seeing.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
I was saying you're with the herd.
Oh,
you're
with the herd.
The sheep, huh?
Don't be mad.
Shelly trying to start a fight.
Just messing with you. Uh-huh. Come on, let's go.
No, y'all are the two.
No,
are you?
Y'all go ahead. It's y'all's turn now.
So you don't think that there's any type of telepathy display? That you think it's just basically coincidence that they take a step forward, it moves back. They move a step back, it moves forward.
I think perhaps some of that might be a little inflated, just because, again, they're trying to assign some kind of emotion to something. And they're in the moment that they don't know what it is. And you wouldn't know as well as I do. If your emotions are running high, you aren't necessarily accurately remembering the things that are going on around you.
Right.
I think probably that, they're seeing something. They know something's up there. I think because they were afraid. And a lot of them in this story, they go after them. They kind of chase them. Then they stop and go, oh, no. Well, they've been following it. Now they've stopped. So it can, all of a sudden, here comes this beam of light. Okay. That could make it look like it was getting closer to you. I am just saying that I'm not exactly sure that this thing was, oh, it came towards me, it backed up. It came towards me, it backed up. Well, you're at a heightened level of emotion. You're probably not accurately remembering every single moment that's going on. So.
But, okay.
But I'm going to be able to tell a craft. Hold on, Ryan. I'm going to be able to tell a craft whether it's moving away from me and moving back towards me. Even in a heightened situation, if I'm sitting here staring at it, you're talking about trying to assign an emotion to something that we don't understand. But this is just the actual movement of something that is going to be extremely traumatic in the moment. Let's face it. It's going to happen. But at the same time, I've witnessed things in the sky. I remember exactly every single detail of what happened in that moment. Mm-hmm. But so you're telling me that this is just a hyper traumatic situation. This person is misremembering it, and they're basically blowing things out of proportion by saying, oh, I took a step forward and it went backwards, and I took a step back and it came towards me.
I think it's entirely possible. Think about the last car the last time you were in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed to be going faster, and everything, your mind tends to focus in on those moments that are traumatic. And now they're actually bigger than what they might have been. So I think in that traumatic moment that, yes, it can appear to be more aggressive, maybe more traumatic. Your fight or flight emotion is heightened. So I think that your reactions might be exaggerated based on what you think is a threat.
I'm gonna have to disagree with that. I don't think so. I think you're more acute with the things that are happening. I think you tune directly in with things, because I'm thinking about the four car wrecks that I've had that very surprised, weren't my fault, took me, came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And remembering every single little detail, not over conflating them at all, just remembering every little thing, how fast we were going, where I was, what I was doing, where my legs were, hands on the steering wheel, things like that. I don't know. I don't see it being an over-exaggeration on that part. I think that there is something, because I think that that is a different level of anything else that we've looked at. Mm-hmm. In any other case that we've had on this podcast thus far. I'm not saying there aren't other cases, but I think so far of what we covered, I don't remember seeing this in any other case. We've heard other cases where I think that, yes, it could have been over-dramatized because it was a very traumatic experience. Just Hopkinsville goblins come to mind real quick. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was like, wow, that's pretty exaggerated, it seems like.
Right.
Not saying it wasn't real, but just saying it was pretty exaggerated. This, to me, doesn't seem like it's to that level. This is like, I thought it and took a step forward, it took a step back, or, I said something out loud and it came back towards me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This shows like a different level of thinking as for the actual craft itself. That's why I'm having to push it towards the alien realm and not some government experiment show.
Well, and the thing is, too, is all these people, if you go back and listen to everything that I read back, these people were educated people. These people were scientists. Mm-hmm. They were police officers. So they're approaching this from a pretty logical standpoint. Like, I saw this thing, this is what happened, and this is what it did. And you have in this case, too, look at how many times people pulled over on the side of the highway, almost as if like it was performing for a group. It kept making circles and flying over everybody. I think that, I don't know.
Your police officer, your aviation officials and things like that, people who work for, the gentleman that was working, was it the Hubble telescope? What was he working on?
Yeah, he was working on the Hubble telescope. Yeah.
These people are trained, especially your police officers, to calm their brain in these very hyper traumatic moments. And so I'm just piggybacking off of you, Ryan.
Right.
Well, yeah. So they're trained to notice detail.
They have to.
A police officer's training, he should go into automatic mode and his training should take over. When did he train to see a ship in the sky?
You don't have to train to see a ship in the sky to be able to handle traumatic situations.
Yeah.
It's not about the object or the thing that you're seeing. It's about these psychological, physiological things that happen to your body whenever a traumatic event occurs. It's Alien in the Sky, chapter 6 today, guys. We're going to be covering that. It's, hey, you got a gun in your face. It just got pulled on you and they're threatened to pull, the trigger, whatever. You've got to calm yourself. You train for those very traumatic situations so that you can try and clear your brain to make very, direct and informed decisions the best that you can. I'm not saying that it's a ship in the sky that they trained for. They trained for being a part of and being associated with extremely traumatic events.
Mm-hmm. They're trained for the unexpected, I guess, is what you're trying to say.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you want to throw it that way,
and,
yeah.
And they're trying, like, think about if they do have a traumatic situation happen to them. They themselves, when they give a statement, they have to give a factual statement, and they're looking for the facts. They're trying to pick out, you know, they're trying to separate themselves from the emotion because they have to. And they're giving the most factual, recounting actual information that they remember from the situation and telling you exactly what happened. So I think that just lends more credence to what Blake is saying. I think that these people are logical and they are very intelligent people, and they, like, I don't know.
Keep talking. I'll find the hole to get in.
So they're logical, intelligent people, and they're picking out the facts the best that they can recount them. And they're just telling you exactly what happened to them. They're not, I think that, you know, we are all human. So there is a little bit of human emotion that's going to be in that. But I think with their training, they are trained to pick out the most factual information and be highly logical. Like Vulcans.
Like Vulcans.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that these people saw something. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt. I would almost be willing to lend to the theory also of a mass hysteria had it been broadcast and people were listening to this. But from what you've said, that is not the case. It wasn't like some massive thing went out other than actually, the radio guy, which was one of the last ones.
Right. Actually, what's, and I read Night Siege for this, which is a very interesting book. Mm-hmm. Check it out. There's a lot more stories in here that I didn't cover. But whenever these UFO researchers went into the Hudson Valley, the media hadn't even picked up on this story.
Right.
They had just heard about it and they were talking to these people. So, no, this was, I mean, as it went along, like, you'd see like a blurb in the paper about like, oh, Hudson, you know, UFO spotted, blah, 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 right. blah, blah. But when it first started, there is no media coverage.
Hmm. Right. So that's why I'm saying I haven't heard you say anything about it was broadcast on the news or anything mm-hmm. like that. So I would have to rule out a mass hysteria on that point. I really wish I'd have known the atmospheric conditions for that particular day when it was spotted 12 times, 12 different times.
Yeah.
Is that how many I counted? Was 12?
Yeah. I mean, it was all over the place. It was spotted even more than that if you read the book, but it was
on that one day where it was later the same day, yeah, mm-hmm. I think I counted 12.
Yeah.
And it was spotted in two different counties too.
Right.
In Putnam and the other county. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be very curious what the atmospheric conditions were. I'd be very curious as to if there was anything else that was going on because, and don't get me wrong, I believe in aliens. There's got to be something smarter than our dumbasses mm-hmm. out there.
Right.
And so I was just wondering if perhaps the conditions were just right that they were able to be visible. Because if you do subscribe to the theory of they're here all the time, it's just sometimes you can see them and sometimes you can't.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on that what conditions happened to make themselves visible? Because a lot of people mm-hmm. said that suddenly they couldn't see them anymore mm-hmm. and then they could see them and they couldn't see them. I'm wondering if that was some kind of atmospheric thing or if they're just playing.
Could have been like, it could have been some sort of, yeah, like that.
I'm going peekaboo. Mm-mm. I'm going peekaboo. Dave's in there reading the manual on the ship going, click on for shield, click off for shield, click on for shield, click off for shield, click on for shield. And he's just turning it on and off the whole time.
I mean, but what if they were the reason they kept flying over everyone and pulling all these impossible feats was to observe how we were, like, humans were reacting to what they were doing.
Oh, they were shaking our ant farm up.
Okay. It could have been. I mean, because the guy that kept turning his light out, is, I'm going to turn my light out. Okay, I'm going to turn my light on. I'm going to turn my lights back on.
Well, and the lady in the truck looking at her door who was flipping her light on and off.
First, and like,
if you don't want them to know you're home, don't turn on your light.
Right. And like I said, she strangely did that almost as if she was compelled to do it. Because normally, if I'm in a situation, I'm looking out the back door, I see a UFO hovering above the woods, I'm going to make myself as scarce as possible. Fuck that.
You ain't lying.
No, thank you.
You ain't lying.
And she turned on the lights, not once, but twice, almost right. like signaling to this thing. Right. So I don't know. I mean, what if it was trying to study how we react.
That's what I'm kind of almost taking away from this, is because a lot of the cases that you've just talked about have to do with this reactionary, I don't even know what to call it, like just our reaction, mm-hmm. you know, basically to seeing this thing. A lot mm-hmm. of it, the ship, is reactionary to right. us, meaning like they get scared, it backs off. Hey, don't go. I want to see you. It comes forward. She turns on the light. It turns mm-hmm. left, turns on the light again, turns right. You know, fishboat right. turns lights off. Mm-hmm. Ship turns the lights off. Back on, back on. So it's almost like, I wouldn't even say it's mimicking. It's almost like it's like studying the reaction right. of humans to seeing this thing in the sky and mimicking what, even though I just said I wasn't going to use mimicking, and mimicking the reaction of humans itself.
Right. And it also returned to the same area over large periods of time, over numerous years. I mean, up into the 90s.
Maybe Highway 84 is its control group.
I mean, it could be. You know, and these things tend to be more clandestine than what this one was. This one was trying, it seems like it was trying to show itself to as many people as possible. So I'm of the opinion, yeah, they're shaking up our ant farm to see what we do.
Yeah, see what we do. And over Highway 84 seems to be good. You go over that nuclear power plant, all of a sudden, now you got to start turning things off because now you're getting an aggressive reading.
Mm-hmm.
So, Well, being that I really have to rely on mass hysteria on that because it mm-hmm. just wasn't well broadcast, well known in the moment. So, yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with they saw something. It might have been Junior stole Papa's craft and rolling around going, oh, crap.
It's Dave.
Wait,
it's Dave.
So crap, you know. Maybe Junior, you know, his mm-hmm. mom was yelling, you know, Grosnick, get back up here. You know, your daddy.
Grosnick.
I don't know. It's the first name I came up with.
She said, Grosnick, get your bamboozled and bumfuzzled ass back up here. But Jesus.
Before your daddy gets home, he's going to know you took out the.
Before Xanthar comes home.
Yeah, the floor. Yeah.
I'm telling y'all, it's Dave. I'm going with Dave. Dave's up there reading yeah. the instruction manual. He can't. No, you know what it is? Mm-hmm. They don't have Google Maps yet. Dave's reading MapQuest.
Oh, there God. It is.
He's like,
he had to print out the instructions and read them.
So, yeah, no, I think it probably was. I think it was, mm-hmm. I think they saw something. I'm going to rule out any kind of atmospheric anomaly because it right. was seen by so many different people in different places. If it had been right. all the same place, mm-hmm. that could have been an atmospheric anomaly. So, yeah, there was something in the sky.
Okay, so Blake is going to he's going with aliens. He thinks it's an alien craft. Do you think it was an alien craft or do you think it was military? And you said they saw something, but you didn't come down one side or the other on that goes.
I'm going to go with the fact that the government, I don't think, I mean, I'm sure by this point they can, but this was the 80s. I'm pretty sure they didn't have cloaking technology. So mm-hmm. the fact that it would disappear and reappear, I'm going to go with otherworldly, technology on that.
Okay.
They're here. They've already been here. I'm sure there's some.
I'm one of them. I'm a cat alien. Remember?
Oh yeah, you guys told you were a cat alien. That's true.
I'm trying to cover my people's asses here. Yeah, it was government. Government.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So final thought, government on your end. I mean, I'm sorry, you said alien. Alien as well.
My final thought is it's alien technology. Blake? By alien meaning something that we are not currently aware of.
Okay. I mean, we haven't even considered the interdimensional aspect of this whole thing. I mean, it could have been the way it like appeared and reappeared. You know, just randomly.
You think it was jumping in and out?
It could have been. It could have been coming, phasing in and out of another dimension as it was traveling along. And an also,
interdimensional space Roomba.
It could be. And the fact that it was a solid object that was able to switch shapes. Maybe in their dimension they're able to, and in this dimension they can't. And it was just phasing in and out somehow. The conditions could have been right.
That is an interesting angle to look at it with the shape shifting ability.
Mm hmm.
So, I didn't think about that. I don't know. No, I just think it's, I think it's just, you know, they needed to make a pit stop why they chose us. I have no idea. But they were like, hey, let's see how these people around this Hudson Valley react.
And they were like, yep, no intelligent life. Let's get the hell out of here.
They were standing in the navigation room and said, hey, y'all, watch this.
That's Dave's voice.
They're looking down going, why the hell are they following us? All right, let's go see what they want. Oh, crap, now they're backing up. Okay, maybe we ought to back up. I don't know what this bitch is doing.
Stop, you're scaring him. Yeah. Okay, I'll back up.
yeah, Groznik or whatever.
Groznik, yeah. All right, well, so that's everyone's final thought. It's all aliens. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of other cases that we've, you know, talked about and stuff like that I've been like, I don't know, that could be government. But no, I think this one's just straight alien. There's so many things to it that these brilliant people had, you know, have seen. And that just doesn't add up to anything else that we've studied. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with you on that. So, I think we're all in agreement there.
I tried to give y'all a fight, you guys. But, I really can't argue whenever I kind of believe it's alien.
She tried by saying they trained for an alien. I ain't talking about that.
I gave it a shot.
You did. Valiant effort.
But whenever I'm completely in agreement with you. I kept looking. I kept looking for that one little hole to drill into and cook and bring that fight out. But. I would have if you'd have kept talking. I'd have found something. But anyway, with that, Blake, why don't you tell them everything they need to know?
Absolutely. Well, remember, After Dark with EVP Season 2 is happening every week on Paraflix Paranormal Plus, with new episodes dropping every Thursday at 7 p.m. This week, we are covering the never-before-seen evidence from Broadhead Manor in Broadhead, Wisconsin. So make sure you catch up on episodes 1-4 now, because next week we will be having special guests from 28 Days Haunted. Nick Simons and Aaron G. Thompson are coming back. Oh my God, you don't want to miss that. Let's just say we had to put a disclaimer at the beginning of the episode.
That one's off the rails.
And they might have invented a new kind of REM pod.
They might have.
They may have, yes.
Well,
discretion advice.
Paraflix Paranormal Plus is available on Amazon Fire, Roku TV, Apple TV, iOS, and Google Play. So make sure you use our link to sign up, which will be posted to our Facebook page tomorrow via our link tree and is also in the show notes for you audio listeners. Use our code AFTERDARK25 for 25% off your annual subscription. Again, that's going to be posted to our Facebook via our link tree, as well as, every social media channel that we are on, our online merchandise store, our public investigations, and our Patreon page. Our Patreon page is the fastest and easiest way you can directly help support the show. For just $5 a month, you will gain access to over 350 additional Patreon-exclusive videos, and your support from this goes directly to the show and all the ghostly ventures we get to bring you week after week. So this price will never change, and with that, you currently get our pre- and post-broadcast, which are the 30 minutes before and the 30 minutes after this live broadcast ends, where we discuss things further. We'll probably debate, tell stupid, idiotic stories that we probably shouldn't tell.
And sometimes wonder, what would the fox say?
Jesus Christ.
Shelly with the throwback.
Oh, God. to the pre-broadcast.
Yeah. We also have our Patreon exclusive raw and unedited investigation footage. We've got some full length SS methods up there, investigation clips from our time at Squirrel Cage Jail with the mysterious Mike and Sam, and some really funny and dirty Estes moments as well. Me at Hill House and me and Ryan at Old Park. So those are fun. So if you've ever wanted to review and watch some raw paranormal evidence, now is your chance. That's only on Patreon. And remember, we are also offering that 7-day free trial for our Patreon page, so you can check it out prior to purchasing. If you'd like to spend some time with us in person, we will be in St. Joseph, Missouri this weekend, April 27th and 28th, speaking at Spirit Con at the Stony Creek Hotel. Again, it's April 27th, 28th, this upcoming Saturday and Sunday. So if you're in the area, come and check us out. We will also be in Broadhead, Wisconsin at Broadhead Manor on June 1st and 2nd for Spirits in the Spring. So make sure we'll be speaking there as well. So if you want to see us in person, come hang out, say hi and all that stuff. It's a hoot, all these Paracons are. So these are just a couple of places we will be coming up, and make sure to check out our pages for future Paracons that we will be announcing soon. So make sure you head over and follow all of our social media channels, search Everything Vaguely Paranormal, and look for that green sound wave. And remember, for you audio listeners, you can always tune into us live on Facebook and YouTube each and every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. And these are all the ways that you can support Everything Vaguely Paranormal, but we also appreciate your love and support for us through those likes, comments, shares, views, and downloads. And remember, as always, any comments, questions, or stories you'd like to share with us, those can be submitted to us at theevppod@gmail.com. That is theevppod@gmail.com.
Like, share, and subscribe.
So thank you for tuning in to another weekly edition of Everything Vaguely Paranormal. I'm Ryan Roberts. These are my partners in the paranormal, Mr. Blake Smith and Ms. Shelley Pruitt, and we will see y'all next Tuesday.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys.